My name is Melissa Marcus. I'm 61. Today is Saturday, July 17th, 2021. We are in Rochester, New York. And the name of my conversation partner is Jim Renfrew and also Roberto Renfrew Marquez. And our relationship is Jim and I are Roberto's parents.
My name is James Renfrew, or Jim. I'm 67 years old. Today is July 17th, 2021, and we're in Rochester, New York today. My conversation partners are Melissa Marcus and our son, Roberto Renfrew Marcus. And I think that's all.
Name's Roberto Renfrew Marcus. I am 36 years old. Today's date is Saturday, July 17th, 2021. I'm in Rochester, New York. I'm here with my mom, Melissa Marcus, and my dad, Jim Renfrew. And I am the son.
Great. So my first question that I wanted to ask you, Roberto, is what are you proudest of in your life?
I am proudest of my family, my whole family, mostly beginning with my parents for taking me out of a very stressful life, and then meeting my wife and having four beautiful children.
Now, in your answer, you hinted that you were adopted by us.
Yes.
Can you tell us what you remember about being adopted?
Nothing too much before I was six, I think. I remember my life before meeting you guys, living at Green Chimneys in Brewster, New York. And then, I mean, even that was still kind of a little hard to remember. But I do remember all the fun times when you guys came to visit. And then coming to your house and then finally being adopted. And Dad and Mom convincing me that the rental car that they had could drive by itself.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. And then I eventually learned it was cruise control.
So, Melissa, what do you remember about Roberto's adoption?
I remember receiving a fax that had a picture of you and being told that you were the child that we had been selected to potentially consider adopting. And you were a beautiful, energetic 7-year-old boy. What I remember most vividly is when I first saw you, when we arranged to go meet you at Green Chimneys in Brewster. And you were walking through a hallway and all your clothes were too big for you. You had these big pants on, you had a red shirt on, and you had this big winter jacket.
Big boots.
Oh, and big boots, right.
Don't forget Swamp Thing.
Okay. And I just remember when you came walking through that hallway, I thought my heart was going to burst. The love that I instantly felt for you was unlike any experience of my whole life. How much my heart filled in love for you. What do you remember, Jim?
I remember the first words from Roberto's mouth were, "Do you have a TV?" And since we were able to say yes to that question, I guess we met the high standard required. what I remember most of all is I thought we would meet a sullen young man who would kind of glare at us and, you know, just not be warm to us at all. But you were ready for a family. That's what I remember. Mm-hmm. And when we began to take visits at our house, we lived a long way away from Brewster. You would come up for different weekends and once for a week, and you enjoyed having your own room. I remember that part. Mm-hmm. So that's the part I remember. Yeah.
Number two.
I'm going to go to this question.
Okay.
How has your life been different than what you'd imagined?
Now, who are you going to ask first?
I'm asking you.
Oh, me?
Yes.
Oh, so my life has been different than what I imagined because after a while of wondering and waiting to meet my parents, my birth parents, I finally got the chance at the age of, I think it was 21.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And seeing the life that they live compared to the life that I grew up with when I got adopted was a big difference. So I guess I probably would have imagined being in trouble a lot, in and out of jail maybe, if I lived with my birth family. And then now that I'm adopted and have been living with my loving adoption or adoptive family, I've actually done pretty good for my life. Took me a while, but I've done pretty good. I am a landscaper. I've been working for this company that I'm at now for 2.5 years, if you don't count taking COVID off. I don't think I would have settled down. I don't think I would have got married. I might have kids, but I don't think I would have gotten married. And I did being here. So I'm loving it.
One thing I remember that was unique was that we actually had a letter from your birth mother explaining why she had decided to place you in the adoption process. Do you remember that letter?
I don't remember what was on it. I mean, it was pretty down to the point.
Melissa, maybe you can help us remember. Many children who are removed from birth families for adoption, it's through a court process. But in her letter, she explained that she had come to that decision herself, mm-hmm. that she wanted to give you a better chance at opportunities. That's what I recall from
it. And I sure did get a better chance.
I think one of the things for me that really struck me when I first read about your history, right? And as I want to fill that in for you a little bit just to make it clearer, is so when we first read about you, it was this child was removed from the birth family's home at the age of 3. And the caseworker, Tim, remember the caseworker, he told us the story about that you and your younger brother, one of your younger brothers, who was like 1.5, were found in a park in the middle of winter, and that the police actually knew your family because they, you know, they had experienced other issues, mm-hmm. and they brought you back, and that your birth dad slapped you in mm-hmm. front of the police, and the police yeah. took you from the home, and you got put into a home with a foster family, like a foster grandmother. Mm-hmm. And then you witnessed a very traumatic event there. Mm-hmm. And that traumatic event, which was something very horrible. I don't think you remember this, but what we were told was you were witness to the grandfather being shot and mm-hmm. killed in front of the home. Mm-hmm. And they had to remove you from the home, and that you then ended up going into Green Chimneys, mm-hmm. right? But you were acting out.
Yeah.
Because of being not returned to your birth family, being mm-hmm. taken from your birth family, not being returned.
Yeah.
And that by the time when Tim met you, you had already been in the system for so long and so, and had not managed to get back to your birth family. And so all that trauma,
you're missing one key thing.
What is that?
The fact of why I was taken and none of the others were.
And that?
That was the biggest.
Well, and when we found
out. And still is to me.
When we found out, when we talked to your birth family later, all those years, mm-hmm. they confirmed that that was a true story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the thing about you, Roberto, that I wanted to make sure to, share is you, despite all of that mm-hmm. hardship, all of that trauma, all of the abandonment, you kept loving or being mm-hmm. open to being loved.
Yes.
And that has made, in my mind, all the difference in why you've healed from all that trauma over your lifetime, because you are willing mm-hmm. to love
mm-hmm.
and be loved.
Yeah. I don't think it would have been the same if I had stayed. Yeah.
Right. That's true.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So one of the questions I wanted to ask you, Roberto, is have you experienced any miracles?
I have. And that was the day I had my first child. It was. On top of, having a forever family. But bringing a kid into this world is a pretty big miracle.
Yes.
Very expensive one too, but all worth it in the end. How about you? What about your miracles?
There were several. One was as we were leaving Green Chimneys for your final trip to our home, mm-hmm. you're getting in the car and you've got your little dinosaur puppet, Timmy, that you had for many years.
Now, who did I name Timmy after?
Tim.
The caseworker.
Caseworker.
I never realized that. That's funny.
But as you're doing that and you're sort of settling into the back seat of the car, right behind us, a window shatters. Some boy is having a meltdown in the nurse's office. And I just remember thinking to myself, this is what Roberto is able to step away from and have a more peaceful life. Now, I want to be honest that we had some broken windows of our own.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was 7.
But every time I think that you were, in a way, trying to test whether the love was real. So you had a pattern for a while of undermining the relationship to see if we'd still hold on to you. And we did. I remember one day you ran away from home, went down the street and stood behind a tree and watched to see if we would come after you.
I remember that.
So it was not an easy thing for you to imagine that you could be in a forever family, as we called it. Because up until that time, that had not been your experience. So that was a miracle that somehow, in spite of all the hurts and pains and difficult memories and challenging behavior, that here we are today. Mm-hmm. And through you, we have these 4 fantastic grandchildren, each of them a miracle in their own way. Mm-hmm. The fact that you found love in your life and have gotten married, these are all miracles. Mm-hmm. These are the things that confirm to me that there's a plan for you of some kind.
Or you did something right.
Well, there's that possibility. Yeah. So those are the miracles that I think of.
What about you, Mom?
It's a funny thing because to me, before I met you, I mean, you know, I saw this picture of you. I read this description of you. You were in that, my mind, I was like, this is my catalog child. I'm getting a child out of a catalog.
Straight from Home Depot.
Right. Yeah. But for me, that miracle goes back to the love that I instantly felt. Even though my baby was 7 years old.
I'm still her baby at 36.
Yes, you are. Even though you were a 7-year-old, and I didn't know, you know, but I can still feel the welling up of the love that just flowed right through me. And I mean, I was like, no one is taking my child from me.
Mm-hmm.
That my child, my baby boy, my 7-year-old baby boy is coming home with me.
Mm-hmm.
There are some other miracles too. Because of the adoption, we were able to tap into a lot of helpful people outside of our home.
That's true.
There were various counselors and psychologists and staff people at schools who all worked real hard to help us keep it together when times are difficult.
Even some people from Green Chimneys.
Yes.
Remember?
Yeah.
You know, we used to go visit Miss Rinaldi. And
you stayed in touch with those folks because in effect, they were your family for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the miracle too is, you know, I don't think any family can do it by themselves. You turn to people who have the skills and experience that you need. And what worked for us is that you trusted those people.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the question?
I want to do number 5.
Okay.
And I'm going to start off with you, Mom.
Okay.
Can you tell me about one of your most difficult memories?
I think one of the most difficult memories was as you were, I think you were reaching the age of like 11. Right. And you were getting bigger and stronger. And, you know, it was one of those times where you were having that, you know, the trauma, you know, was happening in your body. I mean, at 11, you were like still being like a 3-year-old. And because, you know, they adopted children go through with, you know, being all those ages that you didn't have a chance to be with us.
Yeah.
So I just remember realizing that you were getting to be stronger than I was and that I might not be able to help you calm down.
Yeah.
And I began to feel afraid of you and that you could potentially harm me and hurt me, but not on purpose, right? And so I was so afraid. I think you remember this. I ran out of the house in my robe, somehow grabbed the keys and drove the car away from the house. And before I knew it, I was on 490. I was on the expressway and I was like, oh, I left my 11-year-old by himself in the house. And I'm not even dressed.
Yeah.
And I came back to the house. Like, where did you go, Mom?
Crying.
Right.
Yeah.
And I felt so horrible that I did that because I was so scared. But really, it was scared that you could harm or hurt me. Mm-hmm. And I knew you wouldn't mean to. It's just that your aggression and rage, like sometimes when you had that rage, you didn't remember what you were doing in those moments.
Right.
So that's one of the ones I remember.
What I remember about that is we had learned a physical method to kind of help contain you when you were having a tough time and you were too strong for your mom to deal with that. And I remember you saying, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to count on you to figure out how to contain yourself.
And I believe you got a chipped tooth out of it.
I did. Yeah. Yeah. Around that time. I remember it was 13 and you had a fascination with fire.
Oh, yes.
And also that you knew, you figured out that you could punch a hole in the wall if you were angry enough. And so definitely as you were getting bigger and stronger, it was maybe a little more dangerous. But we were also very successful in getting you into a school that was able to work with you so that you could develop some strengths and strategies. And also we got some outside help to actually come into our home so that we could get a break sometimes. There was a 24-hour emergency program through St. Joseph's Villa, where somebody would come to our house or get on the phone with us any time of day.
Yeah.
And that was enormously helpful. But as you got older, you developed more of a capacity to know what to do. You can step away. You can find a safe place. You can punch a pillow. And all of those things made a difference.
It was around the time I started going to Michael's house.
Yes. Right? Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You would go. You know, you always wanted to be around someone who is bigger and stronger.
And Michael's pretty big.
And Michael is pretty big, very tall and very strong. And I think part of that was to, you know, it always struck me. What? He needs to be around someone who's bigger that could help. I think it was to help contain all those emotions and feelings and, you know, that maybe if you got into a rage moment, they could handle it.
Let me ask you this, Roberto. You have four children. Occasionally one of them gets angry or decides to be stubborn. How do you handle that?
Probably not as well as I should.
That's what all parents say.
I mean, I don't physically abuse my children at all, but I've actually just recently, probably in the pandemic recently, that I just try not to argue.
Right.
Pointless.
And you know, one of the things I had to learn with you, I had to learn to zip mouth.
I mean, I think, you know, you want to make your point, but kids just want to keep arguing. And my 8-year-old does it a lot.
Yes.
And he won't stop. And after a while, and I'm now telling my wife not to do it because, you know, I don't like putting race on anything, but she's Italian and she loves to argue. And I look at her every day and I'm like, and you wonder where he gets it from. So between her and my 8-year-old, and now my 3-year-old is seeing what the 8-year-old is doing, I've just learned just to zip. That's it.
Yeah.
Make your point and just leave it at that.
Yeah. It really makes a big difference, you know, and I know that I had to work hard to learn to do that, and that I could do it because you mattered to me, right? I wanted you to get better and better.
Yeah.
There's been some moments where you really have surprised me, Roberto, where I thought I was talking to a wall all those years. I've heard you say things to your kids that are similar to what I said to you. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
There's even stuff that I quote from old music that I listen to.
Old music.
Old music, yeah.
Old music that I used to listen to. That when my wife says stuff, I'll throw those in there. But the most difficult is for me is, I mean, kind of feeling helpless.
Yeah.
I mean, that way back. Now I'm fine, but yeah. You know, way back, that was the most difficult in my memories, was feeling hopeless and just nobody was there. Then I started realizing that there were.
And what age are you thinking?
I mean, I would say probably around 11.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, at the age of 6 and 7 and 8 years, it's just all boggled. And at that age, stuff's going to be all kind of everywhere.
Yeah.
But then, like, my own daughter, you know, realizing stuff now that she's 11, 12 years old.
Yeah.
Probably around the same time.
Yeah. Well, I think it's confusing. You know, it's such a confusing time with all the hormones that mm-hmm. are starting. Mm-hmm. And you also, you know, were like mixed up in ages, you know, and what kind of age you were. You were.
Yeah, my mentality to the actual age.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think one of the things I do want to recognize is, you know, when we met you, you were living in a residential treatment facility, right? And you had experienced a lot there, a lot of really good hope, like how you were mentioning with Ms. Mm-hmm. Ronaldo and stuff. But at the same time, you know, it was a hard place to be and to live because you were in a facility, right, for mm-hmm. with people with serious mental health issues. Mm-hmm. But the one great thing about Brewster was all the healing that was happening through the animals, right?
I loved it.
Right? And that I had really witnessed that, like, the animals at Brewster were used. They were animals that needed to be healed. And that you were learning animals could be healed. The birds could be healed. Children could also be healed. So that was very powerful.
Tell them the best part about it, though. It's not just being healed. So the kids would be healed and find forever homes. Yeah. But not only that, we would heal the animals
yeah.
and then set them free.
Yes.
Remember right. the hawk?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. The symbolism was yeah. very strong.
Not just for humans, but.
Yeah. But then at the same time, later on, because mm-hmm. we had all those mental health arrests
mm-hmm.
because of how much you were acting out and how much danger you were putting yourself in
mm-hmm.
and going to the hospital many times, being kicked out of 5 different schools, right? Because mm-hmm. of behavioral issues.
Mm-hmm.
Then Jim and I, your dad and I, had to make the decision to send you back to a residential treatment facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very, very worried that you might think that we were abandoning you.
Yeah.
Did it feel like we were abandoning you?
Maybe a little bit.
A little bit. But
not so much St. Joseph's Villa, but
uh-huh.
you know, like we talked before, RTC.
Uh-huh. Oh, right. When you went to the psychiatric center.
Mm-hmm.
Then you were feeling that like, one. What? Where's my parents? Why did yeah. they do this to me,
yeah.
right? But we wanted to get you into a facility.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we did that,
yeah.
was so that you could get, from there, you could get set up to be at the, to go into St. Joseph's Villa, yeah. right?
And that was the big changer.
It was. I really do believe that that place gave you the skills
mm-hmm.
that you needed to say goodbye to the bad boy, right? Just like mm-hmm. what you said, we had that ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Graduated from high school
yes.
during that time.
Right.
Only one. That's actually another life-changing thing, you know,
yeah.
compared to being with my birth family, who none of them ever graduated
wow.
or moved on with their lives to being with this family, and I actually did graduate.
I think we're going to need to go to our last question pretty
okay.
quickly here.
All right.
Yeah.
Which is there something you feel has given you purpose in your life? What is that thing?
Landscaping. It has.
Yeah,
it has. I've uh-huh. been doing it for quite some time now. You know, different companies, but for quite some time.
Yeah. it strikes me that it's so good for you because it's physical, right? There's a physicalness, mm-hmm. and that's someone that you've always been, mm-hmm. and that you can do that.
Yeah. I think also human growth and development never ends, but you can go to a job and see what needs to be done, do it, and be done, and go on to the next job. It's you're able to see the possibilities and make it happen.
I'm very good at my job.
It looks like we've been recording, and we have 10 minutes. Cool.
So what about you, Mom?
Which question?
The number 9, the one with the purpose in your life.
Is there something you feel has given you purpose in your life? What is that thing?
Is it called Bert?
Oh, my love. You gave me purpose. There is no doubt. You know, I always wanted to be a mom. From the time I was like, you know, 10, 11, like I realized mm-hmm. that I could be that one day, one thing I could do was be a mom. And I do remember like the first time I ever learned that there were children who didn't have parents. I remember thinking, I want to adopt a child, not knowing. I mean, I just was like, when I'm older, I'm going to adopt a child. Mm-hmm. And your dad and I even had that conversation when we were talking about getting married, because I asked him, I said, I want to be an adoptive mom. And would you be willing to adopt 10 children?
Six.
Okay. It was six.
Well,
and you were like six children.
Yes.
There are two things that I remember. One was we brought you to visit my parents in North Carolina, and you walked in and you went right up to my mom and gave her a hug and said, "Hi, Grandma." That was pretty cool, mm-hmm. you know, because these were strangers and you just wanted to be in a family so much. My other recollection is your mom's family, which is much larger than mine. I remember somebody asked your mother, Melissa, one time, all these children, which ones are yours and which ones are like stepchildren? And she just said, if you're a kid and you're in my house,
you're
grandchildren.
Yeah, you're all mine.
So I think that the extended family's attitude about adoption is really important. That, you know, you're part of the family. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how you got here, but you're here. Mm-hmm. So I think that gives us all a sense of purpose, and we all look out for each other and share in each other's lives. And even though your family, Melissa, is mostly in California, Roberto's a part of it.
All the time.
All 400 cousins.
Yes. Yeah. Big family.
There was one thing I really wanted to remember about that I think made, to me, I've always been struck with, which is that when you were asked by Tim, the caseworker, mm-hmm. that you, what kind of family you wanted to be adopted by, mm-hmm. you picked, and you told them you wanted a Hispanic mother mm-hmm. and a white father. Mm-hmm. And that's the opposite of your birth parents. Mm-hmm. Your birth dad is Hispanic. Mm-hmm. Your birth mom is white. And I remember Tim telling us, we got lots of people who wanna adopt Roberto, but we only got one family that met what the characteristics, mm-hmm. you know, and he was like shocked when he saw our home study and said, oh my gosh, this family is exactly what Roberto wanted. Mm-hmm. And to me, you know, when you were talking about the miracles earlier, now that I think about it, that is a miracle. Because mm-hmm. you could have been adopted by one of those other 50 families.
Biker gang family.
Yes. Motorcycle gang, like you kind of wanted, or motorcycle mom and dad, like you were kind of hoping we were riding. Sorry, son, we don't ride motorcycles. But can't have everything.
Yeah.
But Roberto had just the cutest picture in the blue book.
Oh, yes.
I could see why 100 people would want to.
Oh, you don't have it.
It's in in the album now.
100 people, 100 families would have been interested in it. So, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Anything else that you can think of that we haven't talked about?
No. Not really.
What about you, Jim?
I think we've talked a lot about how you have grown in your wisdom, your experience, your maturity, but I also have grown.
Mm-hmm.
My approach has often been to try to fix things.
Mm-hmm.
If something is broken, find some glue or a hammer and nails and fix it. And I've always thought the same thing about people. If there's something broken, you just fix it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, duct tape,
yeah,
glue, whatever it takes. And I learned early on that my best method for fixing things was to tell people how to organize their lives. You would call that a lecture.
Yes.
And I've learned, I hope, to do less of that,
mm-hmm,
and just be with people.
Because,
mm-hmm, nobody really changes by being lectured, I don't think.
No.
And most people resist being fixed. So I think the secret to the life of our family is really just to be with one another.
Just to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I remember Hank Herrera, you know, who is a friend and a psychiatrist who got us to Dr. Charles Smith,
mm-hmm,
your therapist, a psychiatrist. I remember he said to me, Melissa, if you can just remember to look in your son's eyes,
mm-hmm,
look in his eyes with love,
yeah,
that will make all the difference in the world. That will help him to heal.
Yeah.
So anytime I was like, especially thinking Roberto's really struggling here,
mm-hmm,
I'm going to try to find a way to look in your eyes, eye to eye, and radiate love, mm-hmm, to you. And really, Roberto, what I am most proud of is what a loving dad you are, a loving,
mm-hmm,
husband,
yeah,
a loving son.
Mm-hmm.
You give so much love, and for what you experienced in your life, to continue and build on a life of love is more than I could have ever hoped for in my, yeah, life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really what I'm the most proud of. You.